Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is July the 27th, 2022. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. A little overcast, a lot of rain last night. Finally breaking the heat wave that we've been going through. I'm sure most of us have been going through. Definitely been hot and humid. Brutal. But it is July, so that's what we've come to expect. But it's been a tough week because this is also the week that we had to move, you know, and man, it doesn't make for a great week when you're hauling boxes and, you know, getting testy with one another, and the heat doesn't make it any better, and the humidity doesn't make it any better. So it's just been a real, you know, kind of minding my P's and Q's, so to speak, on my opinions and my thoughts. Always remembering that this is just a tough time for anybody that's going through it. I think moving will make the bestest of friends get in a fight. And luckily, we haven't had too many fights. Actually, we haven't had any fights, but just being super patient, you know, some quiet moments, minus the talking, which sometimes is even better for me because I can just kind of sit and think exactly what I want to say. But it's actually, you know, in the big picture, it's been great. Finally got into the house, got out of the other house. You know, it was exactly what we expected, and we have survived. But now, it's one thing that's very weird is that, you know, we've been focusing on this house for so long, a couple years now. You know, can't wait, going by, checking it out. You know, it's been a huge part of our lives. And now that the house is done and we moved in, I was thinking yesterday, I'm like, I don't have any real big things going on in my life, right? I mean, obviously working and family, and those are big things, but I do those every day. But this house has been, you know, the source of conversation and investigation and preparation. And now it's almost like when your kids grow up and move out, it's like we're almost like empty nesters as far as like ideas go, which has been very strange. So I'm trying to figure out, get back in my groove, try to get back in doing this podcast. I tried to do the podcast the other day and just so many thoughts and nothing would come out. So nothing that really was related to sobriety. This is a sobriety sort of podcast. I don't want to, you know, I can only talk about sobriety so much, but you know, there's different ways how sobriety influences the things that go on in my day. Some great things. One of the cool things that I remember learning early on was restrain from pen and tongue, right? Go on your second thought, take a minute. And that's, you know, that's a big deal. And I use it all the time. It should be restrain from pen and tongue and text. You know, that was kind of, that saying was, they came up with the saying so long ago prior to obviously texting, but you know, it's the same thing. And I almost need to have restraint from thinking about text because I come from the generation where I need to communicate, right? I need to look into the eyes. I need to see the facial expressions, the smile. You know, there was somebody, yeah, I'm not going to say who it was, but there was somebody that, you know, at one point, I don't know if I shared this at all, but at, you know, we were supposed to go to our closing on Wednesday, the 20th. And if anybody's built a house or bought a house, you know, it's a big emotional event, right? It's a lot of money. It's a lot of commitment. It's a scary adventure. So when the day finally comes and you're all ready and the emotions are high, you know, we got the call, right? The call from the company saying, hey, we're going to have to push closing back. Well, my God, all the emotions come flying out. How can you do that? We are prepared. We've done everything you've said. And it's just, and I know this has happened to many people. I've heard the story from five probably just recently of this same sort of thing happening. And ideally, you know, everything runs smooth, but sometimes, you know, shit happens. And, you know, I can say just from experience, we have had a pretty smooth build considering all the stuff that's going on, whether it's electrical stuff, garage doors, fittings, whatever it is, there seems to be some supply chain issues, and somehow we've come out pretty unscathed. And so to have them push our closing date back, you know, brought out a lot of emotions. And one of the people that are in our circle was pretty pissed. And, you know, so when I'm, you know, like having a conversation, because I do come from the generation that, you know, when someone says something, I look for that half a laugh or that half smile or, you know, the communication, because there's plenty of communication that takes place between two people that doesn't include the mouth, right? Eyes, tilting, expressions, you know, all that stuff. And so as a person that comes from that generation, you know, texting and that kind of stuff can expose, you know, how I quickly can be offended, right? And to finish that story, there was a person that was like, I want heads to roll, right? And, you know, as a person, you know, I'm looking for that half a laugh to follow, and it didn't follow. I think this person really wanted someone's head to come off. And I was like, oh, my God, oh, boy, you know, because, you know, that is not recovery. Not that this person needs recovery, because this person doesn't even drink. And it's another great example of why this program is so great, because, you know, I don't drink, but I react. And the program has taught me, luckily, you know, go on my second thought, right? And but when it comes to texting, I get a little bent out of shape. So I'm a guy that when someone texts me, I usually have to call, which is pretty funny. But, yeah, so it's just been, you know, a real testy week. Finally in the house, thank gosh, and just really enjoying it. Still can't believe that we are in this house. It is crazy. Hopefully, if you're ever wanting to buy a house, that gets to happen. I don't know if I shared, but you know, we lived in our other house for 22 years, a double wide trailer, and finally got to a position where we could upgrade to another house, and then we also got to rent out our other house, which is another great thing. You know, we're not going to make a lot of money, but covers the expense and allows the house to, you know, build up value. And so it's all good. It's all been very good. I was thinking about, you know, one of the thoughts that I remember early on is, how am I ever going to get out of this freaking hole? Whether it's an emotional hole, whether it's a physical hole, financial hole, emotional hole, it's just this pit. You know, when the day before I got sober, I was living a life of just a life of lost, right? I had no idea. You know, one of the great things about working a program like this is that it's really helped me to kind of learn who I am and how I react and what I'm about. And it helps me kind of go through my day and have a plan and be able to reflect. You know, before I got sober, you know, obviously I was drinking and carrying on as I was, but I was immature, you know, I was inconsiderate, and I was suffering from self-centeredness. And, you know, I've said before, I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility, and that's a clever little saying, but it was really true. You know, the self-centeredness is gross. But at the time, living the life that I was living, I couldn't recognize it, right? You know, I was the guy that would put words in people's mouths. You know, when someone would share something that they had, I'd be like, I want to come try it. You know, like, why the fuck would I get to come over and try your boat, right? Or why do I get to come stay at your house? Or, you know, if I met people that had any money, you know, I would always be like, you know, how can they buy me some food? Or, you know, it was just this me trying to get something. And, you know, spending a lot of years being sober and working on it and being aware of it, I still think that way sometimes. I just don't say it, right? I just don't say it. And when you're around people that are, you know, whether they're in recovery or not in recovery, but you hear the things that come out of their mouths, it's a lot like what I used to say. You know, I've shared before that I didn't have anything to offer a conversation. You know, all I could do was turn the conversation about myself. And that I could talk about. Like how, oh, yeah, that happened to me. You know, relearning how to listen. You know, Matt was great about that. He would, you know, he'd say, hey, you know, come over and let's chat. And he'd say something. And then I would say, because this is how, you know, this is how I fit in before. I didn't have anything to offer. So I would like give an opinion or a solution, and I didn't know shit about anything. So I remember the time when I was sitting there and he was telling me something and I gave an opinion or tried to fix it. And he goes, I didn't ask you to come over to fix my problem. I just came over because I needed to talk. Which what he was saying is that he needed somebody that could sit and listen. And, you know, but this is, you know, these were all just little things that I would slowly learn. But I remember early on, I'm like, how do I ever fucking get out of this? You know, how am I ever going to be better? You know, I'd gone so far down the ladder. You know, I had nothing. I had a car that my dad gave me. I had barely hanging on to a job, living in an apartment that my uncle had rented me. Just, and if you'd seen my apartment and if you'd seen my car, you would be like, ugh. Or maybe you've even been in that position where you just don't give a shit about anything. And, you know, as I've been sober, you know, I've gotten better. But even like in the old house we were living in, you know, we'd all sort of given up, right? Nobody was, you know, I mean, I had to pay a lady to come clean the house. The main thing that she needed to do was get cobwebs, you know, in corners and shit. Like, I just didn't, you know, I just didn't pay attention to that stuff. I'd lost my motivation to take care of my house and myself. And this is even being sober. This is an issue that's just been recent. And so, you know, trying to figure out, you know, one thing that's nice about our new house is I'm starting over, right? It's my opportunity to turn over a new leaf, and it's been great, you know. Sometimes, like in the old house, we'd sit at the end of the night and watch TV and, you know, we'd eat snacks or whatever and leave packages and empty cups and all this garbage and tissues and whatever, you know, laying around on the tray. And I'd get up in the morning and I had to pick everything up and I'd be like, oh, this is gross. And, you know, now we don't do that. You know, if like this morning I looked at the area that we were sitting last night, it's nice and clean because I put it all away last night before we went to bed, put the remote control. You know, I'm just taking the extra step. You know, we got a new shower. I bought a squeegee, you know, because it has a glass door. So when I get done taking a shower, I squeegee all the water off. I remember when my parents bought a new house many years ago and going over there and because we used to come visit and ended up taking a shower and my mom had a squeegee in there. I'm like, what are you supposed to do with this? She's like, squeegee all the water off the walls and the glass door so it doesn't build up water spots. I'm like, oh, okay. And I did it. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I wish this was my house, right? I wish I had a fresh start. But I didn't. But now we do. And it's kind of cool to squeegee the glass doors and you know, start fresh. And that's kind of how it was when I got sober. It was like a fresh start, right? You know, like I can just put all of the bad behavior, the miscellaneous bullshit that went on in my life, and I can just put it behind me and I can just start over. Was a moonlight mishap? You lost your party hat. Seems your lifestyle ain't so worthwhile after all. Taxi ride and a walk on the wild side. Did your guardian angel let you down? Gonna lay low and play it straight. It's time to rejuvenate. Gonna kickstart your heart to come around. I can't tell.
crazy. You're maladjusted, and now you're busted once again. I can't tell you no. It comes as no surprise. I can't tell you no. By that look in your eyes, give me the sweet lowdown.
Yep, there it is. Sweet lowdown. You know, it's a lot like, you know, buying a house when you get sober. It's like you want to start over. It's been, you know, always looking for the opportunities, you know, especially when I was deep in the addiction of like, when can I, if I could just start over, right? Starting today. And it would just never happen. And sometimes it takes a big event, like getting punched in the face, you know, to really reset my life. Buying a new house really reset my love for our dwelling, right? Find that new passion and that starting point and start fresh, boom, that day. And now, like every day, I want to be a better person that lives in a house. I want to be a better person that lives in my life. I want to be a better person with sobriety. And I think that was one of the greatest things because I was so hopeless. You know, I was living a hopeless life. You know, if you're out there drinking and struggling or you don't know what you're doing, but you're out there, you know, you probably know the thoughts. Like, you know, I'd get up every day. I am not drinking again today. And I've shared this before, but it was a thing. I'm not going to drink today. And slowly over the day, that self-centered bullshit would show up. And next thing you know, it would present all sorts of solutions. Like, you know, how about we do, you know, we'll just drink one beer tonight, right? Because my thing was it was vodka. Vodka. And vodka grapefruit, vodka cranberry with pineapple. I mean, anything vodka with Kool-Aid, I didn't matter. I liked vodka. It got me drunk, and I didn't have to drink as much, even though in the end I would drink a shitload of it. But, you know, that was my thing. So everything that I could come up, every solution that I would come up with for the day would be probably not drinking vodka. So maybe we're going to just drink some beer. Maybe I'll have some wine, even though I never drink wine. But it was always some other idea. Let's not do what we usually do. Let's do something different, and we'll have better results. And it never worked out. In fact, it was probably worse because I would start the night off with beer and then end up with vodka. And so the combination probably made me feel like shit. But I was so used to it, right? You know, if I took Tom, the person I am today, and dropped me into the Tom I was in 1996, right? Or if you even dropped me into the Tom I was, you know, in 92, 93, when I was deep in the meth game and running the streets and buying ounces and selling it and trading fucking guns and just all sorts of... You know, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but, you know, I had a buddy that brought me a gun, big shotgun, big double barrel shotgun. And he's wanted to trade for some speed. And I was like, oh, sure, why not? Traded for it, put it in my closet, didn't care. And then when I got raided, part of my charges was possession of a firearm while in possession of methamphetamine. It was like, you know, if I was going to get like a free, maybe that was what it was meant to be. You know, maybe that was it, because honestly, without that additional charge, I probably would not have gone to that work release camp. I probably, because I was sentenced to work release, which was a program that they had in San Diego where you basically live there, but you left every day to go to your job. And I'm like, it'll be great. I can go to my job. I can do some speed, get high. This is how fucking completely in self I was. I thought that I could be put into a work release program by the state of California and still be allowed to get high. I'm speechless over that. I just don't know what the fuck I was thinking. But when I finally, you know, and I was telling somebody the other day, you know, it is, because I know somebody right now that's struggling with Adderall. And if you are struggling with Adderall, you're on meth. Maybe there's one chemical molecular change or difference in it, but the reality is you're on methamphetamines. And this person that I know is taking Adderall, overusing their prescription. It's just a big mess. And I was saying to them, I said, listen, and I've said this on this podcast, if that had been around back in those days, I don't know how sober I would have been, because that shit is tough to get off of. But the fact is that I was under the delusion that I could still use, take care of my time. And when I showed up for that work release program where I was sentenced, and the whole thing was, I'm like, I'm going to quit. I used the day I went to, when I got turned in, I was in jail high. I mean, that's how full of shit I was to myself. And I remember going to that work release program and checking myself in and being like, yeah, I'm here for work release. And they're like, oh no, you're going to a stage two probation camp or whatever it was up in the mountains, Big Bear. And I was like, oh my God, calling my lawyer, having a complete meltdown. This is bullshit. And he's like, hey, I don't know what to tell you. And that was all because I had that gun. If I had not had that gun, maybe I would have gone to work release. Maybe things could have even gone worse for me. I don't know. But that gun with that charge said you weren't eligible for the work release program. You got to go to the probation camp, and off I went. And it was a real game changer. And I'm not sure had that not happened where I would be today. At the time, it seemed horrible, bad luck, poor Tom. But in the reality, it was probably what saved me, because I did go to the camp. I was able to be clean. There was no using. And even though, you know, when I got out, I got high again. It's just a wicked, wicked drug. And but somehow, right, somehow I got out of it. But, you know, the point is that I was at such a low spot in my life. I just never thought I could ever get out, right? And the point of reminding myself, if I drop myself into the person that I was back then, how freaked out I would be as the person I am today. But I didn't get that way in one day, and I didn't get to this person that I am in one day. You know, it takes a lifetime, and it takes a lifetime of decisions and answers and restraint and, you know, basically defeating, defleeting, depleting, deflating self. It is just a self game. And if I live a life of what self wants, I live a life of misery. If I live a life of what the opposite of what self wants, you know, I can find some peace. And, you know, I wanted to talk about this step, because I think this is where a lot of people get a little screwed up. So it says, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And I think a lot of people really get freaked out about that because the word God. But, you know, if I'm going to break it down to super basic, if I'm getting high, that's not really what God would do. If I choose to not get high, I think that's a life of God. That's a life of what God would do. I don't think that this is asking you to be God or to build a church and praise God. I think it's just saying very simply, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And the care of God to me means if I'm trying to do the right thing, then I'm in a more humble position, which allows me to have a better relationship with a higher power. And let's say a higher power is just happiness or peace, right? A better relationship with happiness and peace. If I'm living a life of self, I'm living a life of inconvenience. I'm living a life of disappointment. I'm living a life that's very bipolar, very highs, right? Expectations, disappointments, pissed off. You know, it's a life of self. I'm a victim of everything that I'm getting or not getting. And that to me is a life of the devil. And I, you know, like I said, I'm not swinging a Bible around here. I'm just saying. So I think the first step was to just start being better, right? Just start acting better. And I think that's what's the great thing about going to meetings early on, is you get to be around a group of people that are sort of doing the same thing. Some are farther along, some aren't. But still, you know, trying to, you know, making coffee, greeting people, showing up, being there, sharing, whatever it is. But it's all sort of the kind of things that God would want to do, right? The devil would be like, don't go to meetings, get high, do everything the opposite. And so I think when it says, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, meaning that I'm living a life that's, I think God would appreciate, right? Or God would recognize or something. I don't know. I'm not even sure if I'm explaining this correctly, but it's just a way of life. It's a God way of life. And but you could say it's a good way of life or a bad way of life. Instead of God, add an extra O. It's a good way of life. Turn my will and my life over to the care of good, right? And, you know, but recognizing, you know, doing it rightly, right? Helping somebody, expecting nothing in return, doing great things, telling nobody. You know, that was some of the early things. I remember someone said, do something nice for somebody and don't tell anybody about it. And I'm like, well, why would you do that? Right? Because it isn't about serving self. It's about serving somebody else and just being cool with it. You know, do that. It starts to expose us for who we are, which is just self-centered assholes with deficiencies in humility. I don't know. Anyway, let me see. Let me read the daily reflections and then I'll let you guys go. I appreciate it. I've been struggling a bit with this podcast again. Did it the other day, tried 3 times. Erased it all. I was like, this ain't working. So, you know, this is the best I got. It's the best I can do. And this is what we're doing today. I don't know. It's funny. I'll do a podcast that's really, I struggle really badly with. And so then I'll go back and listen to it to see if it sounds like it. And sometimes they're really interesting. So, you know, I think problem is I'm just getting in my head about it. So, but here we go. Daily Reflections, July 27th. We will make every personal sacrifice necessary to ensure the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will do this because we have learned to love God and love one another. AA Comes of Age, page 234. To be self-supporting through my own contributions was never a strong characteristic during my days as a practicing alcoholic. The giving of time or money always demanded a price tag. As a newcomer, I was told, we have to give it away in order to keep it. We have to give it away in order to keep it. As I began to adopt the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, I soon found it was a privilege to give to the fellowship as an expression of the gratitude I felt in my heart. My love of God, or my love of good, right? Maybe we add an O, and don't call it God and call it just good. My love of God and others became the motivating factor in my life. With no thought of return, I realize now that giving freely is God's way of expressing himself through me. Yeah. Yeah, if you're struggling with the God thing, I don't know, make it good, right? My love of good and of others became the motivating factor in my life. With no thought of return, I realize now that giving freely is God's way of expressing himself through me. Yeah, man, if you're living a life of good, you're probably living a life of God. If you're living a life of bad, you're probably not. So, but anyway, I hope everyone's having a great day. Hang in there. It's beautiful out, and you know, don't drink, go to a meeting, and if you're having problems, share it with somebody. Later.